Live from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and the callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Everyone, this is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name is Alon.
And my name's Aura.
And my name is Rich.
Now, we do the show every week, the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show. You can go to our website, chatterboxgameshow.com, to learn a little bit more about it, even join us in the live chat. Also, if you want to call during the show, the number is 866-536-1100. Or, of course, if you're local to Phoenix, feel free to call 602-277-KFNX. So, we talk about video games in the video game industry this week. Well, actually, kind of continuing a little bit of what we talked about last week.
It's always like a continuous stream because we're just so smooth like that.
We try to pretend there's a flow of consciousness here. It's as if when we leave the studio one week, we come back the next. It's like we were never gone. And we were talking with Michaela, was it last week or 2 weeks ago? It was last week, I think.
See, it was just so smooth that
it was
all a blur.
I'm pretty sure it was last week. And you can look on the site and actually find that the most recent episode was that one. So she used to recruit students into an unnamed video game school, or rather a school that had a video game design degree, right? And she wasn't too happy with the position there. She felt like the school really wasn't up to snuff, yet her job was to recruit people into that school, basically to make the school money,
right,
on this purported valuable game design degree, when really their heads were up their butts. They didn't have a good program together. They didn't have good teachers.
They were teaching home ec and not telling anybody that it wasn't video game design.
Yeah, even the teachers didn't have a very good education. And anyway, she didn't feel very good about it, so she left. And one of the things that we talked about is, and we've talked about it several times on this show, just various things to know if you're trying to get into the industry. And it's one thing we try to focus on here, especially since one of our sponsors is the University of Advanced in Technology, where I have seen many people move on to be relatively successful in the game design, or not in the game design field, but necessarily in the video game industry somehow, whether it's design or art or whatever.
And I love telling people not to go to school.
Yeah, well, you did it without having gone to school and just sort of being self-motivated. And so you are actually doing a talk at Collins College, right?
That's right.
When is that?
That's this Saturday. And apparently they have two campuses, and I'm going to be at both of them. And I don't know what the details are, but it looks like they're actually taking out an ad in Thursday's New Times. So pick up New Times on Thursday.
Oh,
for our Phoenix listeners.
Awesome.
Right. So
that's right. It'll be good.
Is this open to anybody to just come by and listen?
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean,
this isn't a trick, right? I'm not going to get there and they're going to try to charge me a cover.
No, there's no cover
charge
or anything like that.
Because I can hear you talk anytime. I don't need to pay
and
for it.
This is true, although, you know, I should start charging for that. Actually, I'm not even getting paid for this.
Okay.
But, you know, it's just the kind of thing where myself and one of my coworkers, actually my former boss, incidentally, mm-hmm. Who's also an excellent speaker, I might add, we're going to talk about, you know, basically how to get into the industry. I'm going to basically relate my story, which I'm going to do also later on the show today.
So you're going to go in there and, like, tell them don't go to school and just make a level? And
well,
then...
I mean, the way that I look at it is, yes, that's the short answer, right? But the longer answer is, you know, there's a million ways to get in, right? And I don't want to make any pretenses about what things you absolutely have to do or don't have to do. I can just tell you what I did.
I gotcha.
You can make your own decision about whether that's a good path for you or not a good path for you.
All right. So we're going to talk about that today again?
Yes.
On the show?
Yes.
Okay,
we're going to do that?
Because we've mentioned in the past. I don't know how much detail we've gone into.
This is going to be like maximum detail.
Okay. Good.
For the enjoyment of everybody.
That's great, because I'm kind of tired. I could get some sleep, maybe.
So, you can go to bed. You know, Rich can have a snack or whatever. You know,
well, Rich can learn since he's been avoiding UAT for the last semester.
Tentatively. Is that a word?
Have you signed up for your classes yet, Rich?
No.
We ask you this every week.
Yep.
Are you going to sign up for your classes prior to class beginning?
Hopefully.
Otherwise, it'll be hard to actually attend.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Well.
We'll get there.
UAT certainly driving its star pupils. I can tell. All right, so I'd also like to talk a little bit about games we've been playing lately. Unfortunately, I haven't been playing a whole lot.
You haven't. You know what? I've been continuing to play Persona 3.
I feel this need as the host of a video game radio show to talk about,
like,
having played games a lot.
Like actual playing games.
Dude, life is very distracting lately. I did get to watch my roommate play EA's Army of Two.
Ooh.
Now, you saw it as well.
I saw it, and then I played it for like 15 minutes, and that's all I needed to make all of my conclusions.
All right,
conclusions.
Let's hold that thought. We'll talk about that after Horizon, because I think it is a good thing to touch on.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember now if we talked about Echo Chrome or not, which I finally got to play at GDC a few weeks ago.
I'm actually curious what you think after actually playing it, because I've basically dispensed my entire judgment on the basis of 5 seconds of video.
Well, what's your judgment off of just a few seconds?
Well, it's obvious that what the kinds of manipulations that they were showing in the game were just completely... There's no logic to them, right? So...
I don't know why you would
say
that.
Wait, what are we talking about?
Echo Chrome?
Oh, yeah.
Because it's been a while, right? So, you know, my memory's a little fuzzy. But basically, you know, you're rotating this, you know, this 2D projection of something that's kind of 3D, right? And this is how you get the character to walk on other surfaces, right? But the rules, at least the video that I saw, the rules about how the parts connect and how you can get the character to walk on other surfaces just seemed completely inconsistent and illogical to me.
Well, that's wrong. they are consistent. Although they're kind of hard to wrap your brain around sometimes. For those who don't know, Echo Chrome is it appropriate to say monochromatic?
Yeah, like, sure.
It's just
black. It's lines and white background, right?
Chromatic. Yeah, it's just black and white. Like, not even grayscale, just black lines. Well, there's a little bit of gray.
It's a little bit of gray.
A little bit of translucency at some point. But so imagine Escher. Like, if you don't know the name Escher, those are those weird paintings that have stairs going like left, right, upside down, and all over the place. And
Escher's
they all connect
the man.
In weird ways. And
it's cool stuff.
He's rolling over in his grave right now.
It's a cool game, actually. His
body's probably completely decayed.
So it's definitely inspired by Escher, right? But you actually get to rotate the world. So you might see what appears to be 3D, right? A 3D drawn area that has basically, you know, slabs you can walk on that go in one direction and then 90 degrees somewhere else and then up 90 degrees and whatever. And then so you rotate the view of this black and white drawing, and you do it in such a way where one wall that was vertical at one point like eschews a gap between two planks that are behind it.
Right, right.
And because you can't see that gap, suddenly it doesn't exist.
Right.
And the guy that's walking on that plank just walks as if there was no gap. Or like you fall through a hole, but since you've rotated the world in such a way where another walking space that is appears to be on the same level as the area he just fell through, since now in a 2D plane it's actually below where the hole is, he falls and lands on that. It's really hard to describe in words. But
yeah, to me it's
that's
Snoozeville.
Confusing. And I've seen the videos too.
Snoozerama.
So like because you can't see something means it might or might not be there.
Well, the concept here is like, okay, let's say you take two pieces of wood that are, you know, obviously two, not one piece of wood. You put a 3-inch gap between them.
Yep.
And then you put, you know, 10 feet in front of you, right? And then you put a soda can in front of your face. So you don't see the gap. All you see is these two planks that are lined up perfectly, same color, same width, same everything.
It's like the Austin Powers scenes
with
the sex jokes.
But that doesn't mean there isn't a gap there.
No, it doesn't. But the whole point is perspective, right? What you see and what you assume.
So based on your perspective is what is...
Yes, in this game. This is the crux of the issue.
Like, this is why I thought it was just completely counterintuitive.
So, like, it's like
definitely
we have
counterintuitive,
stuff.
Of course. Yeah. But that's what makes it great.
I don't know about that.
I mean, it's the kind of thing that would only be possible
in a
virtual world.
Of course. I mean, you've seen those paintings or drawings of
cool
impossible
paintings,
objects.
But
yeah. So now imagine actually get to interact with an impossible object.
But why? Then it's just really confusing.
I think for once, Rich is on the same page as me.
Apparently, like, you can already get the demo on the PSP or something.
Yeah, I think you can.
At least according to Penny Arcade, you can. But you might have to hack your PSP. I don't know. I don't really know if it's available for real. But if you can get your hands on it, do so, because it's really cool. I played it on the PS3. It should be exactly the same on the PSP. There's no reason it wouldn't be.
Can't handle the graphics.
Yeah. So, anyway, I really liked it. When we get back after this commercial...
I'll give it 15 more seconds of playtime, I think.
You should actually give it playtime rather than view time. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Arizona's News Talk Leader, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name's Ara.
I'm Alon.
And my name is Rich.
Now, we were talking about getting into the game industry.
We were getting excited about talking to you about getting into the games industry.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to pep it up
Thank
a little bit.
That's fantastic.
Just trying to pep it up. Bring some energy.
Let's take it back down a notch.
That's right. Despite the 2 hours of sleep that all of us have gotten cumulatively, apparently, in the past 24 hours.
We've all had a rough week, I think.
Yeah. So if you want to call in, 866-536-1100.
Nice number plug.
Maybe you have a question about getting into the industry. So as I was saying in the first segment, I'm going to tell you guys a little story about what I did. And I think it's kind of interesting, and it's going to relate to a lot of people who want to get in because I took a very, very, let's say, circuitous route, right? And it actually took me, like, I don't know, 7 or 8 years to actually land a video game development job. So let's start way, way back in the beginning.
It took you that long?
It really took me that long.
Yeah. I didn't think it did.
Yeah. It was.
He woke up one day and snapped his fingers, and then it was done.
Right. Well, it was like 2005.
Yeah, now it's only 2008.
2004, that I actually started doing video game
2004?
Design
okay.
professionally.
But I thought right. you had only worked on your map for like a year or something.
Yeah. But that doesn't count because I wasn't professional yet.
Well, I know. But
it was amateur hour.
I thought that was your from starting to get in, that's what you did.
Oh, no, no. This story starts much, much farther back from that.
All right. Well, you've got 10 minutes.
All right. Let's see if I can do it.
Okay.
So I've always known, like, ever since I was a little kid, ever since I laid eyes on, you know, the Nintendo Entertainment System in, I don't know, like some KB toy store when I was a little kid, right? I've always just been like totally, totally nuts about this stuff, right? So it wasn't very long before I realized, okay, well, you know, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life, which in and of itself I think is a very, very motivating factor because if you know what you want to do and where you want to get, even if you have no effing clue how to get there, the motivation of that will tend to carry you at least so far forward, which I'm sure you guys know about to some degree. Anyway.
I'm not motivated to do anything.
No?
No.
Not even... Okay, we'll deal with that later.
Do a radio show, maybe?
Yeah. That's pretty exciting. Anyway.
All right, keep going.
So, basically, you know, when I was in high school, I started... Here was my little problem, right? I knew that I really wanted to get into games, but I didn't know, you know, A, how to do it. I didn't have the technical proficiency to do something like, you know, the guy that we interviewed last time, who just wrote, I'm just going to write this totally kick-butt game.
Talking about James Silva.
Yeah, James Silva, and he totally did.
By the way, I went back and played The Dishwasher a little bit more.
Yeah.
It's way more in-depth than I thought.
Oh, is it?
It's actually, like, it's much better than I thought it would be.
Because it was fun for the first 10 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, I'd seen you play, and I saw people play at GDC. I finally sat down and said, I'm going to play through the whole thing.
Yeah.
Well, the whole demo. It was really good.
All right, so check it out, right?
Continue.
So when I was a kid, you know, I had the computer, and I wanted to learn how to program and all this stuff, right? I actually found that I didn't have the technical proficiency and or the patience to actually do any really serious coding. You know, I kind of got into it, but it was just many, many half-hearted attempts. You know, I spent a lot of time just kind of drawing, you know, little, like, fake maps of, you know, levels in Super Mario Brothers that didn't exist and stuff like that, right? So anyway, high school comes along, and apparently the easiest thing for me to get into at the time was, okay, I started doing a fanzine, right? So a fanzine, for people who don't know, is basically like an amateur magazine. Basically, it was me and a bunch of friends were like, oh, let's make a fake magazine, right? That's not what fanzine stands for, but that's an interesting thing. And so, you know, I did that for a while, right? And it was basically just writing about games. I printed, you know, 20 copies. It was actually incredibly cool because there was this culture. There was a very, very small culture of, they called them fan eds, fanzine editors, right? And so we all talked to each other and traded stuff back and forth and, you know, wrote for each other's fanzines and stuff like that. And
interesting, there's also a subculture of people who make fun of people who made zines when they were younger. I don't know if you've ever seen
it. I'm sure there is.
But I've heard it. Like, maybe I've heard it in song. I don't remember.
Well, there's all different kinds. There's the posers, right? They were trying to do, like, professional stuff. And then there was, like, you know, people like myself who, like, I had absolutely no illusions. I wasn't even, you know, I was like, you want the fanzine, I'll give it to you for a dollar. You know, I didn't have like a schedule. I just did one whenever I felt like it. Anyway, that eventually got me into doing some freelance writing for some outlets for free, right? Didn't get paid for it. Mm-hmm. Eventually, that got me into writing for pay, right?
And that's when you worked for Tips and Tricks?
And so throughout that time, right, that was like right after college, I got into Tips and Tricks, right? They gave me a job offer. The funny thing was, just the whole time that I was in college, right, I was like, man, I really want to get into, you know, game design. You know, actually, I didn't even frame it that way because I didn't even know what game design was. I just wanted to make games, right? So the thing was, I was going through the programming program there, right? Computer science. And the one thing that I was absolutely sure of throughout the whole thing was that, okay, I don't want to be a programmer. So I went to school to learn programming to find out I didn't want to be a programmer.
I didn't go to school for programming. I just decided ahead of time, I really don't want to do that.
Yeah. And honestly, I felt like I didn't have the level of technical proficiency that I needed to really be successful at that. Right? So I was like, well, how can I do this? Right? So like, all right, I got a plan. I'm going to get into journalism, right? And then I'm going to meet all these people. I'm going to make connections. I'm going to network. I'm going to hook up. And I'm going to schmooze my way into game development, right?
Okay.
Great plan, right?
Well, what did you end up going to school for?
Computer science.
You actually graduated with computer science degree?
Yeah.
Okay. Really?
Yep.
How did I not ever remember this?
Anyway.
He never told
anyway,
us.
Anyway, right?
It's a secret until now.
Here's the funny part. All that stuff totally didn't work. I found out that it was very easy for me to get interviews, right? Because I knew a lot of people. The thing was, they don't take game journalists seriously, right? It didn't matter that I had, you know, a 4-year degree from a nice school. It didn't matter that, you know, I'd written papers about game design and gotten them published. Didn't matter that I was, you know, working in the games business, albeit as a journalist for so many years. None of that made any difference at all, right? So I got all these interviews. That interview, don't get hired. Interview, don't get hired. Over and over, right? Finally, it gets to the point where, a group of people that I interviewed with, you know, I developed a pretty good rapport with, and they were like, look, you know, we think you're really smart, and we might have the aptitude to do this, but you don't have anything to show for yourself, right? We don't care how smart you are. We care. All we care about is prove to us that you can make a game, that you can actually design, right? So they told me, what you should do is go and pick up a copy of Unreal Tournament, make a level, and get back to us, okay? So here's the funny part, is that I did what they asked me to do, right? And so, you know, I got a copy of the game. Unreal comes with an actually fantastic set of tools, by the way. It's amazing. It took a long time. It's a very complicated set of tools, actually.
I've actually heard a lot of complaints about this, but I think relative to what you would have were you to not get Unreal, you're, you know, doing quite well for yourself.
Well, I mean, in the world of, like, proprietary design tools, which is what Unreal Ed is, that's, like, it's up there. It's fantastic. Yeah. Usually proprietary tools are really crappy.
Especially for somebody trying to get in. Like, you buy the game for $30, $20 even now, and you get all the tools.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's not like $5,000 for a program.
So. Anyway, here's the thing, right? So I'm writing for this magazine, Tips and Tricks. I'm feeling really antsy because I've been there for, like, 4 years. And I just feel like I'm on the outside looking in. And so I start working on this level, right? And I have to tell you, it was one of the hardest things I ever did. Because it just came down to this, that I basically resolved myself that, look, you know what? I'm going to make myself work on this for an hour every day, no matter what. You know, I'm just going to set aside an hour, even if I don't want to do it. And you know what? Like, most of the time, a lot of times, like, I didn't want to work on the thing. You know, I had to basically learn this whole tool set. I printed out documentation of, like, you know, 300-400 pages, right? Just, like, trying to learn the system, trying to make some stuff, right? After, like, 3 or 4 months of this grueling kind of stuff, right, I finally get to the point where I have enough momentum and knowledge about the tools that it actually starts getting fun and interesting, right?
Did you start by actually laying it out on paper?
There is a lot of that, right? I made a lot of levels that were kind of like throwaway. Like, oh, I'm going to test this. Oh, I'm going to test this. I'm going to see if I can do this, right? And so through all that testing and trying out stuff, the idea of what level I wanted to make kind of emerged, right? And so I actually ended up making like 3 or 4 levels by the time I had the one that was like the one that I was going to present, right?
Okay.
And so it's obvious I'm not going to finish in time for this segment.
But leave it. That's a good time for a cliffhanger, but, dude. You got to keep them wanting more.
That's right. That's a good idea.
So let's break.
Let's do that.
Increase the suspense.
Mm.
We, Chatterbox, will be right back.
It's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woohoo!
Back again. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio with Alon.
And Aura.
And Rich.
Now, as you could tell, we were just talking during the break about more of the stuff that Aura was busy doing, trying to get himself into the game industry. So continuing with the saga, he starts off young, little lad, wanting to make games in the games industry. Doesn't know what that means, but he wants to do it. So he starts writing, and then he starts getting paid to write, and then he goes to school and realizes that's a... Well, I might be out of order here, but he goes to school.
That's fine. That still works.
Realizes maybe programming isn't the right thing.
Definitely not the right thing.
So he decides that he's going to build a level in Unreal, build several, comes down to just the one he wants.
Right. So here's an interesting thing. At the same time as all this was happening, I talked to a few people who are actually in the industry and asked for advice. And one of the best pieces of advice I ever got was that this guy who is a big-time producer at Sony... You know, he asked me, you know, okay, well, what do you want to do? You know, and I said, you know what? I'm not exactly sure. And then in response, he said, you may not be exactly sure, but don't let anybody else know that. And the importance and weight of that cannot be stressed enough. Basically, Rich, come on. Let's have
a
little attention.
I'm listening. Yeah. I'm reading the calendar.
The thousands and thousands of listeners can hear you flip the pages. Okay. So
flip the pages of his brain.
Yeah. Sorry, continue.
So here's the thing. If you want to get a job, you have to just, even if you can't really decide, you have to see what positions are available, decide which one you're going to go for, and then present yourself as being ideal for that position.
Well, I think it's true. Anytime you go in for an interview, if they think that you're not really dedicated to whatever position is they're,
right.
they're searching for,
right.
they're like, well, we want the person who really wants this position.
Right. And now it seems obvious. Back then, it was like a like I was like, wow, really? Oh my gosh. Yeah. So, you know, it might not be obvious to a lot of people, I think. I didn't know if I wanted to try to become an associate producer or to be a designer or to do something else. I didn't even know what the difference between a designer and a producer was.
It's okay to change once you get in.
Sure, sure. But the way that you present yourself is one of the most important things. So getting back to this Unreal level, right? This was really a fantastic thing. I encourage anybody who has any inclination to do any kind of pursuit as far as like something creative, just, you know, do what I did. Just make yourself do it on a regular basis, even if you hate it. For a small amount of time, and eventually you'll get enough momentum in what you're doing that you'll actually start liking it. And that's where the good stuff comes in. So here's the funny part is that I got so into what I was doing, and I got so obsessed with, you know, I'm not going to show anybody this until it's completely done, that those guys at that studio that I interviewed at who are like, okay, you know, come back to us and show us what you've done. I didn't want to show them something partial, right? Mm-hmm. So basically, 6 months later, I'm like, okay, here's the level, it's done. And they're like, wow, this is really great, but we already hired the position. So I was like, okay, whatever. And actually, you know, I mean, I never got hired there, but it didn't matter because, you know, after I finished the
level,
I had this level, right? Here's the other thing that's really important is volume of work is not important. It's the quality.
Mm-hmm.
Don't, if you're going to be a modeler or something, don't show them all the models you've made. Don't even show half of them. Show like two or three of the best ones that you've done, right? If you're a level designer, just show them your best level, right? Don't you're not going to impress anybody with volume. It's the quality of whatever it is that you're showing them. And not only that, but it's like the first 5 or 10 seconds that somebody at a studio is evaluating your work is basically when they're going to make the decision of, oh, this guy has some chops, or, oh, this guy just did, you know, the 3D Maya tutorial, and I don't know why he's showing us the results of the tutorial that anyone can do, which actually happens. Don't ever do that.
Well, I think the polish that you add to something that's original is certainly important, because we talked about, at least some other show, basically, you know, 10% of the work produces 90% of the result,
yeah,
and 90% of the work produces the last 10%, and that last 10% is what shows off.
Yeah, and it was absolutely that. And the cool thing was, ironically, doing this whole level was the most creatively fun part of making games that I've ever been in my career.
Because so once you actually got the job, you haven't done anything as interesting as...
Comparatively, no, because you know what? I mean, I got to do my own sound. I got to do my own, like, I did a little voice. Right. I mean, my friend had some audio equipment. He helped me, you know, make the voice sound cool or whatever. I did some art. I did some design. I did a little bit of coding. You know, all of this stuff is accessible to everybody if you have the patience to go through it. Right. And the other thing, too, is nobody was telling me what to do. Right. I made my own decisions. OK, I like to do this. I want to do this other thing. Right. So, I mean, really, you know, that's kind of been something that I've been searching for ever since I actually started working for money for this stuff. But anyway, basically what happened was, after I finished the level, and this is also a very important part, right? I made a web page to show it off, and I was absolutely incredibly lucky, because about 2 or 3 months after that, some HR person at a studio saw my web page. She showed it to, you know, whoever people were working there, and they asked me to come in for an interview. And that interview landed me my first job. And it turned out that was another incredibly lucky circumstance, because it turned out that the people who were working on this project, right, this ended up being the Red Star, in terms of, you know, our design philosophy and our just sensibility of making games, I mean, like, our wavelengths were, like, just perfectly aligned, right?
Nice.
And so, you know, I have to say, you know, there's a lot of lucky things that happened, right? But at the same time, none of those things would have happened or even had a chance of happening if, you know, all that work and all that trouble was not put in beforehand.
So it's too bad that studio got dissolved.
Yeah,
people really were so in tune with.
It is. We've been kind of like talking to each other off and on over the years, actually thinking about, like, all right, when are we going to get the band back together, type of thing.
Are they all still working?
they're all still working. Yeah, we're kind of scattered around, you know. But I don't know. Maybe one day. You know,
little indie studio. Who knows.
One of them has to make it really big, right?
In a garage.
Right. So, I mean, you know, if this is something that, you know, you guys want to do, and by you guys, I don't mean you guys in the studio, but everybody listening, you know, the main thing is you just have to be, like, really, really super persistent, you know? I mean, like, look at what Sylvester Stallone did with Rocky.
Yeah, and look at him now.
I'd rather not.
Look at him now.
No, seriously. look him up, you know?
Rocky was pretty,
There's a very famous story of, you know, Stallone going to, I don't know, hundreds, trying to submit his story hundreds of times,
yep,
and getting turned down time after time after time. You know what? You only need one person to say yes. Just because 50 people or 100 people say no, it shouldn't discourage you. I mean, essentially, like, it might, but you should take comfort in the fact that, like, you know what? If you really want this, you just have to keep trying. You just have to keep trying over and over and over.
Yeah.
And you know what? Eventually, you're going to get it.
The underlying theme there is basically, if you're not a loser, you might actually succeed, right? Because a lot of people look for the quick fix or the easy solution or the, I don't really know what I'm doing. I'll make some games. I'll go to school and then I'll get a job, right? And whether you're going to school or you're not going to school and you're doing it the way you did or however, whatever you do in life, if you actually try and put in some effort, you stand a chance to actually be successful. And this is a consistent theme throughout life.
Sure, but it seems
a little bit obvious at this point, but...
Well, yeah, but it's exacerbated for the game industry, because in the game industry, there's a lot of competition. On the other hand, I do have to say that there's a class of people, right, who, when they apply for jobs, their work is just so much better than everyone else's, right? Sometimes it's because of talent, just sheer talent, like, okay, you're just awesome at drawing or whatever, right? But I think other times it's just... If you really are that persistent, right? It's the difference between people who work hard and people who are, and this is really, like, one of the points I want to drive home, people who are enamored and excited about the idea and the concept of making games, not with the actual activity of making games itself. And so you have to ask yourself, you know, what do I really want? Do I just love the idea of games and I just want to be associated with the game industry? Or do I actually really, really love the process and the grueling work, because it is grueling work, of making a game?
And that carries over to things not just video games. Like, you could be designing a board game and you'd probably be just as interested. And I think you might, if you're trying to decide if it's a field you want to get into, you might actually consider doing something like that. Just, there's this whole concept of game design, whether it be video games or something else. You know, I don't know if people play a lot of board games who are listening, but I'm all into Catan, right, which comes from Settlers.
Right.
Like, that's like the best game of the year or whatever, or European, I don't know. It won all sorts of awards, right?
Right.
And it's because people put a lot of thought into the design of the game. They don't just, like, put some pieces together and it comes. Like,
yeah.
It probably took years to design. And you could do that with a board game or a 3D game and or a 2D puzzle game or whatever.
Absolutely.
You can use those design theories to build all sorts of things, and it applies everywhere. We'll be right back. Talk about something else.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name's Ara.
This is Alon.
And my name is Rich.
Now, Rich is there manning the online chat, which you can see at chatterboxgameshow.com. If you want to call us, it's 866-536-1100. Of course, you can also email us during the week, and then we'll mention your emails if they're interesting enough, or questions to us. Like, feel free to ask Ara questions about game design. He mentioned that game, The Red Star, that he made, which I just like to mention a lot because everyone agrees it's a good game.
I love to hear you mention it a lot.
Yeah. Have you ever actually heard any reports of numbers of that thing sold well? Your company has nothing to even do with
no.
it anymore.
I also have not heard any reports of the song that Pen15 promised to make us about the Red Star.
Really?
Yeah. In exchange for a free copy.
Oh.
He's actually not even in the RC right now, and I think I know why.
I think that he's
time change.
Feeling
yeah.
a little guilty.
There was a time change that we forgot to mention last week.
Because we don't change, so we don't care.
That's right.
Because Arizona is smart, and they don't.
Because that's how we roll.
Well, that just means the people who came on at 8 and 11, they found, the show's not here.
Yeah.
And so maybe it's on again later. Hopefully they came back. I don't know.
They should just keep listening.
They'll listen to it on the podcast.
Yeah.
So before we move on, of course, I want to mention UAT again. That's the University of Advancing Technology. Wonderful sponsor of the show, which you can visit their website at uat.edu. They're actually in Tempe, down here in the Phoenix area. Is it a party town?
Party
ASU
town.
Is the party town.
Yeah.
Which
Same
is
thing.
In Tempe.
Same thing.
ASU's yes. in Tempe.
I know, but it's
but yeah.
ASU is the party area.
Yeah.
Not all of Tempe is composed of ASU.
it should be.
It's not?
Because part of it is composed of UAT.
Yeah, UAT is not the party
section.
I
thought it was just ASU, really big mall.
Yeah.
Tempe.
Yeah. It's pretty much.
Okay, so back to gaming here. Rich, you and I had the displeasure of seeing EA's Army of Two.
Yeah.
And so my roommate got it. It's not that it was in a bad setup. We've got, like, the surround sound, the 1080p.
Surround sound with a huge plasma or LCD. Yeah. It's a very, very nice setup. But,
everything is pretty much as perfect as it can be.
Yeah.
But it's just not perfect.
Oh. Not even close. It's not even good. Like, it's just bad. It's pretty.
It's sort of pretty.
I think it's pretty.
So now, I think you saw it more than I did, but you had some complaints.
Some?
what was your main complaint about this game?
My main complaint is that the controls are horrendous. Like, it's one of those games, it's a third-person shooter, and so going into it, I'm just thinking, okay, Gears of War, different theme. Because Gears of War is how a third-person shooter should be. I have a couple complaints about Gears of War. Most of that's multiplayer, but anyways, like, that's how a control should be for third-person shooter. You know,
I actually have a lot of problems with the control for Gears of War.
But
or maybe just one problem.
It's so much worse in Army of Two. Like, the cover system in Gears of War actually works most of the time. Army of Two just doesn't work ever. Like, you might be able to somehow crouch down and get behind the thing, but then part of your arm is sticking out, so you get shot anyways. And then, like, you stand up, and then you get shot in the head. And then your other person drags you around back and forth while constantly being shot at, so you both die.
So there's always two people. It's Army of Two.
Army of Two, yeah.
Two guys going around, and you can play cooperative, right?
You can play with two people, which is you have to, I think, is what it comes down to, because the other, your AI teammate is retarded, has no idea what he's doing.
That was your big complaint, that the AI teammate is a moron.
And the controls are like, the aiming isn't, it's not tight. It's like a really, it's like you're trying to wade through mud. Like when you move left, aim left, it kind of like slowly goes that way. And then when you stop aiming left, it kind of slowly stops aiming left. And the camera isn't stagnant behind the shoulder. It rotates around the character the more you aim left and right. So like you have no really any idea of where you're supposed to be aiming.
I did not have huge complaints about the control.
It's really weird.
I had complaints because the one time I played the game was to try and save my my roommate who was playing for real from dealing with this bug that was a showstopper bug. Just he had to, you know, hit some control panel to turn off some electricity to get past something.
You have a knack for finding those, don't you?
Tell me, oh, this one wasn't even me. It's part of the story. Okay, you go into some room, and in order to get to the other part of the room, you have to turn off some electricity so you can walk past the water that's electrified. Real simple. And that's the only objective.
Really cliche.
To get across. If you don't get across, the game has nowhere else to go because that is the one bottleneck goal.
Aren't they wearing,
goal.
Like, rubber shoes, like rubber soles on their boots so it wouldn't...
Not to mention they could just jump over it.
Oh.
Anyway, so the guy's like, hey, turn off the electricity. And so there's a big bright green button, and you press, like, the action
X.
button or whatever. And there's a specialized animation that has him hit the console. And I don't know how unique the animation is, but it's something that activates when you get close. So clearly we were doing the right thing. He walks over. He slams on the panel.
Uh-huh.
There's no notification that anything successful has happened, but you hit it. Like, you basically punch the console. And nothing happens. And he does it again. Nothing happens. He does it repeatedly, many, many times. I'm like, Johnny, give me that thing. And I start shooting stuff, the electric cable and all sorts of things, which I know will not do anything, but I've been surprised in the past. So I try. Shoot the console, nothing. And then there's this mode you can put on that it shows you your objective, which I actually thought was a really good idea. Because a lot of people get lost in games. They don't know where to go. So this is like, all right, dumb down. You press the select button. Everything sort of turns this hazy blue. And then it shows
you... Which is really weird.
It is weird. I don't know what the intention is, but... the goal is that it basically shows you where to go, shows you your current objective, like walk over here, interact with this physical space. All right, so everything turns blue. There's this little green box that you have to stand in, and that's exactly where you have to hit the console, the green button.
So they literally draw for you, stand here,
yes.
When you do this?
Yeah,
but you won't use that.
That's pretty cool, actually.
You don't use it during the game, though, because it's so distracting. Like, it's such an alteration of the screen appearance.
Right.
But it's useful if you can't figure out where to go. And so... I kind of like that idea just because I've been lost in games and
the myriad of crazy illogical puzzles requiring,
So, I mean, it's not great from a gameplay design point. It's just, you know, you might as well move forward and anyway, I should have said game design because it's not much of a design. It's just getting you past the fact that they didn't design it well enough. And so I turn on that little blue Spectrovision objective stuff.
Right.
And I do exactly what he had done. I slammed on the console a couple times. And turned it off. Still nothing. No indication that anything's happened. But then I look. Oh, the electricity's gone. And we had hit the thing like 15 times, dude. Like, I did exactly the same thing that had already been done. There was, again, no indication of anything. But suddenly, I had hit it with the objective markers on. Okay. It's disappeared. And now he can walk across and do whatever the hell he needed to do. So showstopper bug, right? It should have gone away.
It looks like... It was functional, it just didn't have the feedback that it needed to tell you that something actually happened.
Well, no, when you hit it 10 times and nothing happens, not functional.
Oh, and what was it, like on the 11th time or something?
No, like I went into that objective mode, I hit it, and I have no idea if it had anything to do with the fact that I went into that mode.
Got it.
But I did,
for some reason,
after we had tried so many other times unsuccessfully. And then I did exactly the same thing I had done before in that objective screen. It wasn't a screen, it was just a visual filter. And then suddenly it worked. But again, there was no feedback telling me that it worked. But it was really annoying. And so Rich and I were having this discussion about are these big companies like Ubi and EA just create games that are polished? They give it that extra 10%, but they kind of miss the other 90% ahead of time.
I would frame it in a different way. I think that their priorities are totally bass-ackwards in terms
they make
of
it look pretty.
Where to apply to polish. They apply it to technology. They apply it to art. They... do not, under any circumstance, apply it to design.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, though, people keep buying the games, and so it's just, I mean, is this...
they advertise.
Is just flat out evidence that graphics make the game? Do you think it's the advertising that does it?
I think that's part of it.
Well,
I
here's
mean,
the thing, right? You know, you can see graphics in ads. You can see art in ads.
Yeah.
You can't see game design in ads.
Nope.
Or magazine coverage.
But it's not just that. People don't get it and then feel tricked. They get it and they're like, oh, this game is awesome.
Because that's all they play.
Because they get convinced through the advertising that it's this great game.
And that's a whole other discussion. And
yeah.
I just... confused. And then you have this list of what companies get the best ratings. EA is somewhere actually towards the top. Wow. But
EA's
Ubisoft
like number
is way
seven.
Ubisoft's way at the bottom.
Like, he's
I think that's because of their crappy Wii games that they put
anywhere?
Out.
I suppose EA publishes
no
Valve.
They don't release enough games.
Yeah.
But... it's just something I'd love to delve into sometime. Like,
we should totally
how
delve
is
maybe
into
that's
that.
What EA's
they're
at
so
top.
Successful and they it's produce games
they publish
that are consistently
Valve games.
Because they publish Valve games.
Half-Life 2 is awesome.
It's a good point. All right, well, another day, another show. Thanks, everybody, for listening. This show will be posted a few days late, as the most recent show was basically just put up today. So, anyway, keep listening. We'll be back on a regularly online-presented schedule next week. And if you have any questions, go to chatterboxgameshow.com.
Good night, guys.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info in the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.